Our text number is 51551. The email is history@rte.ie, and you can find us on Twitter at RTE History Show.
I'm just excited for the world to now discover who she was and what she meant to all of us. I mean, nobody who's taken a medicine has not been affected by Henrietta Lacks.
Oprah Winfrey there talking about her forthcoming film, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, which will appear on our screens later this year. But just who was Henrietta Lacks? What was her story and why is her life described as immortal? Sean Duke, science journalist, is with us in studio to tell us more. Sean, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Miles.
Give us a bit of the background of Henrietta Lacks. Who was this woman?
Yeah, Henrietta Lacks was a poor black woman from the tobacco fields of the state of Virginia in the USA, which is of course part of the Old South. And then at a certain stage they wanted to kind of leave this little town which was called Clover, Virginia, and move to the big city where there were better opportunities. They went to Baltimore, which was a big city, and they'd heard a lot of black people at that time. This is the early 1940s, and of course the US had entered the war, or was about to enter the war, and the steel mills and various industrial production was really starting to ramp up. So the word had got out that there was good jobs to be had in the state of Baltimore, or in the city of Baltimore in Washington, D.C., and they decided to follow some of their friends up there to Baltimore. And things were fine for a while. And she did find it hard, Henrietta found it hard, to adjust to new life in the big city, because she's living in this brick, red brick house, in a terraced house, if you like, urban. And she, the town she came from was tiny. Clover was absolutely tiny. So that was tough. And the story goes that she did try and bring the kids, every chance she got, she'd bring the kids back to Clover on the bus.
Tell me then about her illness and her death.
Yeah, well, after the last child was born, that was Joe, that was 1950, she shared a secret with her cousin Sadie, who actually shared this with other people later on when a book was written about her life called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. And she said to Sadie that she had started bleeding and that she was really worried because it wasn't her time of the month. She was wondering what was going on. And when they were chatting, she said not only that, she'd found a lump. She then went to Johns Hopkins, which is this amazing medical center we'd all have heard of. This is 1951, though, so things were a bit different back then. The gynecologist on duty was a man called Dr. Howard Jones, and straight away he looked at Henrietta and thought, this is very strange. He saw something glistening and smooth, and it bled very easily when it was touched. So he did a biopsy, obviously he didn't like the look of it, and it came back and it was a cancer, and they took two samples of this tumour off Henrietta. Now at the time, if a doctor took a sample, that was fine. You could essentially do what you want. There was no need to get permission at the time, so that was quite normal.
For subsequent research.
You didn't have to get what they now called informed consent to use people's tissues or to take samples. They tried to stop this cancer, but this cancer was really uncontrollable. It was incredibly aggressive. They used capsules of radium around her cervix where it was located to try and kill the cancer. That didn't work. She ended up coming in and out for treatment, but it was getting worse and worse. The cancer cells were growing faster than the radium could kill them, essentially. She couldn't hide her pain. She was trying to hide it from her family. And eventually, after a few in and out of hospitals, she went in for the last time in August 1951. She didn't leave. She died then on the 4th of October, a couple of months later, at the age of 31.
Body riddled with cancer.
The cancer had spread everywhere, lungs, liver, kidney, through her bladder, at a pace that was just phenomenal. So that was the end of poor Henrietta.
Yeah, that was the end of Henrietta, but it wasn't the end of Henrietta in another sense. What part did her cells play, or why did they play such a significant part in subsequent medical research?
Yeah, well, there was a story that the family, we can get to this later, they didn't know about this, but there was a story that these HeLa cells were taken by a Dr. Gay, was his name. He was one of the researchers involved in Johns Hopkins, and essentially he was looking for a cure for cancer. So in 1955, at that particular time, it was impossible to study cancer properly as we know it today, because you couldn't take human cells out of a human and let them live in the lab. They would die straight away if you tried to do that. And they tried various different cells to grow them in the lab, to culture them, as scientists say. Didn't work. So Dr. Gay looked at these cells, and these cells seemed to be replicating at a phenomenal pace. He said, maybe we can look at these. He took them and he put them into a Petri dish. Not only did they survive a couple of days, they actually started spilling out over the Petri dish and contaminating everything in the laboratory. So he thought, these these cells are phenomenal. Now, they were cancer cells, but they were human cells. And that meant that you could do certain things. You could look, you could apply things to them. Most famously, I guess, the big thing that HeLa cells did was the polio vaccine. Jonas Salk came along. He was looking for a vaccine. Polio was huge at that time. It was killing a lot of children around the world, virtually eradicated now. And essentially, he injected the polio virus into the HeLa cells to watch how the HeLa cells reacted. He looked at that reaction, got some clues out to how, as to how a virus would be built.
Interestingly, presumably he would have got access to these cells because Dr. Gay didn't keep them to himself. He adopted what we would probably describe nowadays as an open source approach.
He distributed
the cells of Henrietta Lacks to other researchers.
That's right. That's exactly what he did. And that might sound awful, but actually he had a good intentions in mind, really, because he thought, look, these cells are going to help us. Cancer was his focus. It turned out it helped for lots of other things, mainly polio, a few other things. But he thought the more researchers that are interested in cancer and get these cells to use them as a way to study cancer, the better. So he farmed them out. They were replicated all over the world. They were a cell line, if you like, a particular type of cell line. And within that, there were different types of subdivisions of cell lines that became new cell lines.
And this is, it's also the grandparent of IVF.
Absolutely, the grandparent of IVF, because the way they did IVF essentially was done on HeLa cells initially to try and get the process going, the technology, if you like, the technique of IVF.
So we owe an awful lot to Henrietta Lacks, but there is another issue. There's a moral issue. Now, maybe this is a retrospective moral issue because, as you say, no permission was required at the time. But when did the Lacks family realise what had happened, the cells of Henrietta Lacks?
It was a long time later. It was the early 70s. So she died in 51. So you're talking nearly 20 years later. And the family got a phone call out of the blue. And scientists were actually asking them to donate samples of blood just to match them with what they were studying from Henrietta. And they said, what are you talking about? They had no idea any of this stuff, that there was any research going on. And then they found out that these HeLa cells had been produced. But again, they agreed to go along with the research. They didn't want to be awkward about it. And they provided samples of their blood. But then the researchers disappeared and they never came back to tell them about what exactly they were trying to do or what the results were. So this kind of made them more resentful, that they felt maybe Henrietta was exploited. She was poor. She was black. She, you know, didn't have a lot of education and she hadn't been asked whether these cells were used or not. Then they did some reading and they found that actually the cells had been used to test cosmetics. There had been patents taken out on various aspects of these cells and biotech companies. So people had made money on Henrietta.
And this is a woman who's in an unmarked grave.
In an unmarked grave. This is 1970-71. They didn't have enough money between the five of them, five children
who are
now adults in the 50s. They couldn't get it together to get a headstone for her. They, like a lot of people still today in the United States, they couldn't afford health insurance. And meanwhile, Henrietta's cells were making fortunes for people. So that kind of soured them a bit. And it did develop into a controversy and they became less likely to go along with everything that the scientists said. Now, even in 2002, which is not that long ago, when their father died, they just about managed to get the money to give him a headstone. And then finally, Johns Hopkins, who were the medical hospital involved in this story, they started to honour the contribution of Henrietta, but they remained very sensitive to criticism. And they've always come back and said, well, look, you know, because they have a reputation as a big research hospital. They said, 1951, you can't judge it by today's standards. You didn't have to get consent. And that Dr. Gay, who was a member of staff, he gave the cells away, but he was doing it for the benefit of researchers rather than trying to make money.
And do HeLa cells have an immortal future? Is Henrietta Lacks still with us and will she be with us for many years in the future?
Yeah, apparently there are a lot of people. I checked and loads of people are still using them. Tom Cotter, who kind of is a well-known researcher down in Cork in cancer and other areas, he's using HeLa cells and they're still used all over the world today. So, you know, they reproduce so quickly and they're so easy to use. There's only one problem with them. They're actually so immortal, if you like, that they're so dynamic and they just refuse to die that they can contaminate the lab.
What an incredible story. And perhaps, who knows, it might not have happened if modern standards were used. But you're talking about the 1950s. It was a different period. Sean, thank you very much indeed for that. The film The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, produced and starring Oprah Winfrey, is due for release later this year. World Cancer Day is on the 4th of February, and the Caroline Foundation for Cancer Research will be marking it with a novel fundraising idea, Give Us a Song, that will be happening over that weekend. The Caroline Foundation is asking people around the country to get together to sing and to raise funds. If you're in a group or a choir or would like to get involved, you'll find more details on our website, rte.ie/history.
Text The History Show on 51551.
Just a quick couple of texts. Somebody texts to say that when talking about the polio vaccine, we should also pay tribute to the federal prisoners in the US who were the first human recipients. And as well as being a hosiery stronghold, Balbriggan Town was also historic for being destroyed by the Black and Tans. Indeed, it was. Black and Tans very enthusiastic with their matches they were back in the early 1920s. That's it from the programme for this evening. You can listen back to the programme and find more details about the subjects we've been discussing on our website, rte.ie/history. Later this evening at 8 o'clock, RTE Radio 1 will mark Holocaust Memorial Day with a new programme featuring Holocaust expert and Auschwitz guide Pavel Savitsky, Auschwitz, An Echo Trapped Forever. Noel Roberts was on sound. For me, Miles Dungan, and producer Alan Turney, goodbye and thanks for listening.